It was a fulfillment of a lifetime dream.
Hi again, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we'll listen to an exit interview our North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley recorded with the outgoing president of SUNY Plattsburgh, who's had his share of ups and downs over the past 15 years. But first, speaking just after lawmakers adjourned for the year, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling it the most productive legislative session in modern political history. Since January, Cuomo has worked with a Democrat-led legislature, the first since the Democrat took office in 2011. Wrapping up work on Friday, lawmakers passed a number of progressive measures, including greenhouse gas reductions, allowing undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses, and codifying the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision into state law. Cuomo touted these measures and more during an end-of-session press conference.
Cash bail, plastic bag ban, LLC loophole, other issues that popped up, measles vaccine, which turned out to be an extraordinarily difficult, complex issue. Massive accomplishment.
Lawmakers did not legalize recreational adult-use marijuana or gestational paid surrogacy. SUNY Plattsburgh President Dr. John Etling is retiring at the end of June after leading the college for 15 years. During his tenure, the northernmost SUNY campus undertook its first $16 million capital campaign. A facilities master plan for campus improvements was created, and the construction and rehabilitation of two academic buildings was completed. But Etling also faced challenges, especially in 2018 when racial incidents on campus led to student rallies and votes of no confidence against the administration. As he looks back at his time, Etling tells WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley that he always wanted to be a college president.
I wanted to be a college president. I had lived in Saratoga Springs 1989-91 and was a visiting professor at Union. I love this part of the country. I'd never spent any time in it before. So I said, if something comes along in this part of upstate New York, a presidency, I want it. And lo and behold, Plattsburgh had an opening, and it was an ideal kind of school from my point of view. It's a small, residential, undergraduate liberal arts with professional schools programs grafted successfully onto that in a gorgeous corner of New York. So I said, great, let's do this. This is what I've been preparing for all my career. Public education, I profoundly believe in it.
Well, you stayed for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Fundraising is a big part of being a college president. And one of the things you did was lead a $16 million capital campaign. How do you approach fundraising?
I was the face of that. But most of the real good work was done by Ann Hansen and her colleagues in institutional advancement. They would just bring me out to shake hands and receive the check in someone's office, or else to show up with my wife, who's marvelous at this kind of work, at alumni receptions, and we'd go to all over the place. And so I wasn't calling people cold and asking for money. In fact, I would usually be the person that would be, make the ceremonial, oh, thank you, after the details had been worked out. So I can't take credit for that. I was in place, and that was part of my job. But I did what and went where Ann Hansen told me to do and to go.
Well, whether it was the fundraising or dealing with the fiscal ups and downs of the college itself, you came in 2004. That was before the 2008 recession, and you've obviously been here beyond that. What have been the fiscal challenges at the college as you've, been here over that decade and a half?
But it's almost, in some ways, it's like Joseph interpreting Pharaoh's dream. I mean, there were seven good years and then seven lean years. And the first 7 or 8 years I was here, enrollments were rising, budgets were good, And then the recession came, and then enrollment started to fall, and that's what we've been contending with ever since. About 2010 is when enrollment started a gradual decline. And the reasons for that are pretty simple. They're completely demographic. There are fewer and fewer graduates of North Country high schools, and that's been our traditional catchment area since 1889. We go to New York City, which is the only place in the state where high school graduation numbers are actually stable or growing. So if we're going to keep enrollments up, we have to go farther afield to find students. Everyone's in New York City recruiting. It's a pretty heavy lift to bring a young person from the Bronx or Brooklyn to Plattsburgh, which is predominantly Caucasian. I mean, the last census, I think 2010, found like 4% of Clinton County African American. That's so kids growing up on the streets in Brooklyn or the Bronx will find that this is a very strange environment. Most of them can adjust, some of them can't. The reason enrollments are so important is because about 82% of what we spend every year at the college comes from our students. Taxpayers through the legislature, through the appropriations process, account for maybe 18% of what we spend now. So enrollments are critical. The enrollments equal budgets. Fewer students means less money to spend. 85% of what we spend every year is salaries. So fewer students, less money, fewer employees. That's the iron law of enrollments. It's not just New York. It's nationwide.
Well, with that equation, too, is there also a quota from SUNY that says you must have X number of students each year?
No.
You also mentioned going further afield for enrollments. Does that mean you have to compromise the quality of students that you do enroll?
Put it this way. The last couple of years, we've admitted students with lower SAT scores and high school grade point averages than we did 10, 12 years ago. There was one point, 2006, 8 in there, where we were actually admitting only about 46% of the students who applied. We're turning a lot of them away we don't have that luxury now. So we're admitting students who do have slightly lower SATs and high school GPAs, but they are still, on paper at least, prepared for college work, but just perhaps not as well prepared as some of the students who are applying. Their older brothers and sisters say, well, except the same family, they're probably equally bright. So, in any event, yeah, and that presents challenges to our faculty as well.
Dr. Ettling, you mentioned, in moving further afield, you also are getting more diverse students in, even though diversity is an issue in that the college is still mostly white, basically.
Yeah, although mostly. Two falls ago, 42% of our entering freshman class were students of color. And that's a substantial increase since I arrived in 2004.
Last year, it seemed like diversity issues really peaked on the campus. In February, you had the racist Snapchat post. There were protests. I mean, there was even an effort to have some of the senior administration resign, including you. Looking back at that, what do you make of everything that occurred then? Would you have changed the way you handled it?
I'm sure we could have done a better job. Although, Pat, let me say that following up on a complaint to the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Education, they actually did conduct a retrospective investigation of not just the incident, but its aftermath and how the college handled it. They wrote a report. It was a lengthy report. It came out last summer, and they said that we had responded promptly and appropriately. So, yeah, I'm sure there are things we could have done differently, and we could have had some of the things in place then that we have now that would, I think, reduce, although not eliminate, the possibility of this kind of incident happening again and responding to it effectively and more effectively than we did then. But both of the incidents, the Cardinal Points cartoon and the Snapchat post, were students who had no idea what they were doing and the kind of anger that they were going to release. That there will be students like that. The part of what we're supposed to be doing is providing them with an education that will allow them to live comfortably in the 21st century as adults. And the second incident, the young woman had grown up in Keene, and she didn't think there was anything wrong with what she did until the reaction hit. The young man who drew the editorial cartoon for Cardinal Points had no idea that it would be seen as racist. He didn't really understand what that meant, I don't think. Well, when we looked into how this came to be, found out that he grew up on Long Island and reached the age of 20 or whatever without ever having heard of affirmative action. So that's a failure on the part of all his teachers, and us included, his family, his church, his friends. How do you not know, at least have heard of affirmative action? You can hate it or you can like it, but to be oblivious, and to give this person access to thousands and thousands of people through an editorial cartoon, that's things like that will happen. It will happen, and it happens on all college campuses.
Well, Dr. Etling, as much as it being a learning experience for the students, how much of a learning experience was it for you to go through those?
That's a good question, Pat, and it was. It was a painful learning experience because I think that a major part, if not the major part, of my job is to make the students who come to Plattsburgh feel comfortable and safe on our campus. If we can't make them feel at home here and safe, we failed. We failed them, even if it's not our fault, even if I'm not the guy driving the pickup truck down Ruger Street with a Confederate flag in it. And I understand how that would provoke in students of color feelings of insecurity. Why am I here? And that's painful for me if I can't assure them that we will make them safe and welcome. We try, but we can't control some of the things to which they're going to be exposed here.
You mentioned a pickup truck driving, through the campus, because there are, city, state roads that go through the campus.
Yes.
What's your assessment right now of the town-gown relations or city-gown relations?
I think it's pretty good. And I don't think it's worse than it was when I got here. I'm not sure it's any better. We've tried. I mean, I remember when Donnie Kasper's act came in to office as mayor, he and I formed a town gown sort of task force to make recommendations to how we could improve this, and they did. And we did what we could in the college to implement those recommendations. I think the town is fortunate to have the college here, although that's not always obvious to the people who live on, say, Court Street or Brinkerhof at 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
And you've been doing more linkages with Clinton Community College and businesses like the North Country Economic Development Council. How critical and how much more critical will that be in the future, even though you won't be leading the college?
Well, it's not just that we sit in Plattsburgh. We're a major employer in the K-12 county, and our faculty and staff are out there in the schools and the churches. They have children there. They're consumers. So we are as much a part of Plattsburgh as anything else. I mean, we've been here since 1889. That the college acknowledges its responsibility for helping the region develop economically is something I certainly believe. I've served on Gary Douglas's board for 2 terms now. I got off the Regional Economic Development Council. I told them I was retiring. But I'm on the Clinton County Development Corporation Board. I'm not an economic developer myself, and my degrees are all in history, not in business. But I'm a presence representing the college on these boards, and it's a good thing. My successor will have to be just as involved, if not more so.
You mentioned being a professor of history. Do you plan to go back to teaching?
I would love to, Pat, if somebody will have me. I haven't stayed in touch with my field, but I've lived through much of the last through the American century, so I ought to be able to talk about that. I'd love to teach a course somewhere, either here or back in North Dakota, wherever we end up. As long as they don't expect me to go back to graduate school and sort of renew my PhD.
Well, maybe you can create a graduate studies program here and do a little of both.
I don't think that's in the cards, but that's thank you for suggesting it. We'd have to get state ed to revise the college's mission. But I don't think that's going to happen. But if I could just teach a course, I love to teach freshmen. And when I've taught here, I've taught freshmen. Same thing when I was back in North Dakota. For several reasons. One, because I love freshmen. They're so clueless often. Yeah. Why do I have to take this course? I don't care. And also because here especially, I don't want anyone to think that they're too important to teach freshmen. Everybody ought to at least acknowledge that they belong in a freshman classroom every now and then.
After you've been retired for a while and you look back on your tenure as SUNY Plattsburgh president, what do you hope your legacy is?
I'll leave others to decide what my legacy will be. I've been too close to the campus and its twists and turns over the last 15 years. So I'll let others, I'll demur on that question if you don't mind.
Okay.
I will say that there are two profound differences, but in the way in our students now, as compared to when I arrived 15 years ago, and I'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about. In 2004, when Lisa and I arrived in town, Mark Zuckerberg was living in a dorm at Harvard. There wasn't a Facebook yet, so our kids now have grown up in a digital universe, and that's a large part of how they learn, okay? And the other is the demographic that we were talking about earlier. There are students coming from other places besides the North Country. Social media, let me just give you a quick example. From February, there was an ice storm, and everybody knew the night before that there was going to be an ice storm. I went to bed around 10 o'clock. When I got up at 5, a student had collected over 3,000 signatures on a petition online asking me to cancel classes that day. They were able to get 3,000 signatures, 3,000 plus, between 10 in the morning and 5 at night. No, 10 at night, 5 in the morning. So that, it's hard to stay ahead of that, you know. You can't say something, you know, snide like, you're the only consumers who are happy when you get less than what you pay for, but they were demanding. Of course, they weren't all students, but it doesn't matter that they're able to do that in the middle of the night.
It's changed.
It has changed.
So have you gone past your official last day?
No. My official last day is June 30.
Well, hopefully we will see you around.
I hope so too, Pat. I love this place. And I will say, if we're concluding this interview, that this job has been, it was a fulfillment of a lifetime dream. I mean, and it's the kind of school that I hoped I would have an opportunity to lead, and I've had 15 good years here. There were some days that weren't as good as others, but it's been a good ride for 15 years. I love this community, and I love the campus.
WAMC's Pat Bradley speaking with retiring SUNY Plattsburgh president, Dr. John Etling. And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Be safe. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.